Hello, hello. Welcome to the Tetracast, episode 354, recorded on July 6th, 2024. I am your host, Josh Torres, substituting for your usual host, Brian Vitale. He is out at Denver, enjoying life right now. He's been giving us updates on all the cool art that he's found at this convention in Denver. It's awesome. And we'll hear back from him next episode next week. Until then, I am, assisted by some of our regulars here, Adam Vitale.
Hello.
And Xiaomin Wu.
Hi.
James Galizio, who usually joins us here, is out at Anime Expo, which is happening right now. We are like on day three of Anime Expo. He's been doing great work out there and been having a lot of fun in the Los Angeles heat. So, you know, he's hanging in there. Until then, we're holding down the fort here. We do have a bit of games to talk about. There have been some new releases this week. Of course, there's been some news that has come out of Anime Expo and so forth. But other than that, it's kind of been a relatively, you know, quiet week, which is fine. Starting off this week, of course, the biggest release is, once again, a new release from HoYoverse, formerly known as BeHoYo. They've become very, very popular since the release of Genshin Impact. That is not their first game, but that is their most popular game that got put them on the map here in the West, and then followed up with Honkai Star Rail not too long ago. Instead of an action RPG, it's a turn-based RPG. Chao really loves it.
Sure.
You do, and that's fine. And then their newest release is Zenless Zone Zero. This is another action RPG from HoYoverse. It is instead of the more fantasy inspired themes that surround Genshin and Honkai, this is a more urban grounded setting. And I've been putting quite a bit of time into it. I think that is the HoYoverse game that I vibe with the most. More so than my time with Genshin and Honkai Star Rail. I really appreciate a lot of this game, what this game is going for. I don't know what the common consensus is. I don't really pay attention to that stuff. But like how people feel about it. It feels... I don't know. I think there's definitely some people like it, but I feel it's more divisive than...
I feel it's a very divisive game. You love it or you hate it. Personally, for me, I'm kind of mixed about it. Mm-hmm. I liked the story, how simple it is, not too word bloat like a lot of like HoYoverse games, which is kind of like a good thing for me. But the combat, I feel like since Wuwa just kind of came out before it, I vastly prefer that game, and now I'm just like... kind of like no interest in like
The Wuthering Waves, like I think definitely the recent release of Wuthering Waves from Kuro Games definitely had some impact on this game, because I do agree that I prefer the combat system in that game, but we'll get into it. First off, like, this is kind of a interesting departure in many ways from previous HoYoverse titles. Like, one thing that stuck out to me off the bat is how they treat its main protagonists, its main characters. They're not silent protagonists in this game. They're very, very actively voiced characters with distinct names. The main protagonists in this game, who are both relevant and present, are the siblings, Wise and Belle. And they are ostensibly like very revered hackers in this world that help assist and navigate agents into like these zones called hollows, and these are like dangerous zones where they get a mission from a client, and they might have to retrieve something, might have to investigate something that pertains to these zones, and they have to extract something, or they have to like go rescue a missing person and so forth. But navigating these without like some sort of navigator is pretty perilous, because like dead ends. Things that look like dead ends, for example, may actually be exits, or you can actually go through like certain walls and so forth. So, like, what you see isn't necessarily like what is reality in these. They have the power to like kind of distort like the space-time continuum, and and so forth. So navigating these without some sort of like some sort of navigator assisting you through it is a pretty dangerous aspect in this world. And the story is kind of, once you start a new game, you're kind of in the middle of one of these operations where your characters are already assisting the squad called the Cunning Hares, and they're on a mission to kind of steal something from their client, like some sort of like vault or key locker. Things go awry, and they basically make an escape out of this building into like a hollow, and they enlist your help to kind of get out of that hollow, and then you know that's kind of like your tutorial, starting tutorial, and so forth. So they kind of lose their package, and one of them is able to. Two of the three of the members of the Cunning Hares go into the hollow. The other one, it goes to like the siblings, the navigators, says, "Hey, please help me get my teammates out of there." And then that's the whole tutorial section. And so you go through the mechanics of how this exactly works. It doesn't like really overload your brain with a lot of like lore up front, which I really appreciate. It's very easy to kind of follow the story naturally, which I really like through this. So after that whole mission, you kind of get introduced that hey, there's a sibling duo. They're collectively known as Faithen, and that's kind of like their username or code name, and that's how like everyone like refer to them as. As you go on through the story a little bit more to go retrieve that lost package that they lost in that hollow, there's a big event that happens where your characters, the Faithen, get hacked from an outside party, and to basically save themselves, they have to give up. It's almost like that Metroid moment of where you lose all your powers. So in order to like kind of save yourself from this outside party trying to hack you, you have to give up your account, your super high level account, to them, and you basically have to start over from scratch. And that's how your own player username that you created, you know, is put into play. And that's like your new
starting point. Basically, your new starting point.
Yeah, pretty much. When you're typing your new username, that username is only like for like your new sort of like user account identity, but it's not like your own player character's username, because these two character names already have their own distinct characters of Bell and Wise. So that's pretty cool that like, hey, you're actually just playing these characters and living out their lives, and so forth. So that's kind of where the starting story is of like, hey, you have to kind of start from scratch. There's also like a duo thing where like, you know, by day they are this, and by night they're like the super hacker navigator leading these agents. Like by day, like their normal day job, funnily enough, is like running almost like a rundown Blockbuster. They have like they have VHS tapes, and they stock the store with videos, and people just basically rent out videos from their store. So you kind of have this whole set, like mini section of the game, like the where you're able once a day, like as part of your dailies, you pick out like a person to go sell these videotapes or to be as your cashier almost, and then like three recommended genres, and then you'll get like passive income for the day because you took like 3 seconds to go do that. And then like there's certain times in the story where like there'll be story scenes of like, hey, we have to go restock, you know, our videotapes and so forth. You just see them like carrying boxes of VHSs, which is, you know, kind of a funny, you know, flavor to the setting and so forth, which is nice. I'm trying to think what else. That's kind of like just a very basic premise. It's pretty easy to follow. I have to admit, I didn't give like the best probably description of it. You know, it is what it is.
It is what it is, yeah. But, yeah. I think it's a lot simpler than, like, other MiHoYo games, like, when it comes to story, because I feel like, I don't know, in Genshin, like, actually, like, Genshin starts off pretty simple, but as later patches go on, I think after they, like, switch writers, it becomes a little bit too wordy, and then it becomes, like, a whole, like, word slop, and you're like, what the hell's going on anymore, you know? It's, like, very hard to keep up, right?
Compared to Genshin, Honkai, Wuthering Waves, and, like, even, like, old ass are, you know, things like FGO, Fate Grand Order. Like, I think this Zenless Zone Zero has been like my favorite start to at least one of these games, because usually, like, historically, most like games of this nature, like mobile gacha games, like, have dog shit beginnings that are like really annoying to like kind of like get into for me, usually because they uproot like. They push forth their, like, lore and premise so hard on you. Like, I remember in Honkai Star Rail, when you're, like, getting introduced, like, the space gods and there's mythology and, like, the whatever universes or whatever, a lot of that info is like, hey, you found this text log. Here's this fucking 3-page text log full of fucking text that explained this shit. And it's like, no, it's okay. I don't care, actually. And it's like, oh, you didn't read that? Well, you won't understand. It's like, okay, then I don't care to understand then. It's okay. I don't want to know about your story then. That's a lot. It's like, while the content itself might be good, the presentation of it really matters for me. Like, if you're not making it so it's easy to understand in a natural way, I don't care. And that's what Zenless does well, is like, it doesn't really feed you that up front, and the characters just speak normally to each other. They're not speaking in like, they're not talking around each other to go mention like in world terminology and like, oh, have you heard of the Divergent One in, you know, that holy place?
I think, and I have, like, an allergy to that sort of exposition. Whenever people start explaining things to each other that they should already know. For the sake of the audience, I think I start breaking out in a rash. Like, I just hate it.
I'm just like, that kind of dialogue just really irks me a lot. And Wuthering Waves is really, really bad about this too. I mean, on top of like its English script just like reading like very dry and usually like sometimes often just doesn't make sense. They talk about that a lot. Like, for example, in the new 1.1 patch for Wuthering Waves, you go fight this dragon talk, and that dragon refers to itself as like as that one. You know, it refers to itself as that one in like all in like the caps. And I'm like, I can't stand it. I can't stand it.
You know, I have a shorthand for this sort of dialogue that I consider like, When people in a story are talking to each other and like explaining things to each other in exposition that they should already know living in this world, but they're doing it for the sake of an audience, that pulls me out of it. I call this my father, the king.
Yes.
Hypothetically, like a prince or a princess talking to someone and saying, my father, the king, when the person they're talking to like knows they're the royalty. Like, you don't need to explain to me that your father is the king,
right?
Like, you get it, right? And it's just it pulls me out of it so hard when people
and
start talking like that.
And
sometimes
the smart thing of like when it does that, like, since Bell and Wise are like pretty much the outside parties of like when they're working with these factions, you can at least get exposition from them, because you're playing as their perspective. They might not know like what's going on with them. So, for example, at like near the end of chapter 2 in that game, which I think is like one of the best parts of that game, that was like the last story bit I played in that game, is you're working for this with this group called the Bellabog industry and so forth, and you're kind of keyed into like the main storyline that's going on for that chapter when during like this cleanup to go basically retrieve like these three rampant AIs that are like in cranes, it was their property and they're trying to retrieve them, but like these cranes can like talk to you. There's like bits and pieces about them that are like odd, and the final one that you retrieve mentions the name Kors, And then, like, in the after, like, once it mentions that chorus, you see that everyone from Bellabog kind of makes like a surprise. Some are depressed, like, face of, like, when they hear that name, like, just very surprised, like, they would mention that name. But it doesn't, like, you know, fill you in up front of, like, you know, chorus is this, this, and that, like, chorus X is, you know, this right away. It's like you, after that event, you, the player, talks with Bellabog about, like, you know, what happened, and then you mentioned, like, oh, like, you know, when it mentioned the chorus, like, you guys, like, kind of responded to it weird, like, you know, what's going on, and everyone kind of looks at each other, like, and then one of them mentions, like, you know, it's been a while already, like, she, like, you know, she deserves to know what's going on, because we're working with them, and so forth. So it's like, okay, so you learn that chorus is was the previous president of Bellabog Industries, and was the father of the current president, and so forth, and you're filled in on, you know, why the former president stepped down, why he's missing, and this whole kind of weird conspiracy that's gone on that from the previous president's disappearance. And it becomes, you know, like a family story from then on. But the way that it's presented to you, it's not like super upfront or in a log. It's not like they're not feeding it to you in a way where, like, you really didn't ask for it. It's more the player initiated that interaction of, like, hey, I noticed that you guys responded this way. It's like, okay, that's a more natural way to feed into that expository point that you, because obviously the player will want to know, for the sake of the story, who Kors is. So what's a way that you can feed this info to the player in a more natural manner without doing it in, like, how other games do it, pretty much.
Without giving you homework or whatever.
Exactly.
So...
Exactly. So, that's something that, like, is really worse to Zenless's strength on that. It's like usually in these games, I'm just, like, thumbing through the text as fast as I can just to, like, play the video game. This one's like, oh, okay, I'm actually paying to the dialogue of, like, in the story cutscenes. I do have a skip button. I can't skip it. But I think it's, like, interesting enough to, like, you know, learn about these characters. And I do like the whole dynamic of the game where these are basically different factions in the world, and, like, they have different they all feed different objectives in this world, so forth. And I do like that it's not an open world as well, like Genshin or Wuthering Waves. It's very compacted and or separated into isolated zones. Even stages are just stages. It's not like this big open world where you have to do so many of these open world activities that it's like, you know, it's annoying, pretty much. Did you wanna? Did you have anything to say to that, Chow? Just, like, in general, what you played a bit.
I don't think I sink enough time to it because I kind of drop it pretty fast. Yeah. I was looking at it. I'm like, I don't think this is for me. I know there's people that are really engaged with it, but yeah, I'm just sense. Like,
yeah,
you know, it's like I'll just stick with what I have, right?
Yeah, I think that's kind of the divisive thing about this game is definitely its gameplay and its combat. Because early on, like, probably arguably way too long, the early stages of this game, like, it doesn't really pick up until, like, maybe the end of chapter 2, and it's just, like, that's a lot of time in the game already. Where the combat flow is very button mashy. It's like you're bringing a squad of 3 into stages, and There are certain times when you have like a basic attack string. Some characters, depending on their mechanics, case by case, where you have to maybe hold down a button to enhance, like, properties of their basic attack, or some characters like Soldier 11, where, yeah, it's more like a rhythm game, where in order to get her sword on fire for subsequent hits in her combo attacks, you have to properly, like, time the next hit in the combo chain. And they also have, like, EX attacks, which are, once again, a case-by-case attack, where, like, Ellen's EX attack attacks with her tail that does a lot of ice damage. But you build up these EX attacks through a meter, through your basic attacks and swapping out. When enemies attack you, they'll usually have, like, a very big tell of, like, when they're about to attack you, like, a big, like orange, like, sparkle. At it, and when you see this orange sparkle, you either want to swap characters or dodge when you see that. Usually swapping characters is kind of the better than dodging, but you know, it's case by case once again. Where you'll swap out to the next character and you'll do a lot of damage through that parry, and you also build up a lot of days on the character on the enemy. So each enemy has like this separate meter below their health bar, where it's basically a stun meter. So you build it up, and then they'll be stunned, and then you'll go into this whole sequence where you're kind of rotating between your characters, getting their hits in as they're stunned, and that's kind of where the big meta. That's kind of where your all your DPS is going to. Like, some main attack chains, you know, are pretty damaging, especially with the attack characters. But like when it comes to like stun characters or support characters, they don't really do that much damage until like you get your the days rotate or stun rotations in, pretty much. And that's kind of the bread and butter of the combat, where you're kind of going through your just normal attacking normally, either with your basic attacks and then mixing in some EX attacks, and then you're looking for that, you know, incoming attack to kind of swap to the next character to get their attacks in, and then by that time there'll be another incoming attack to go swap to the next character. The resource to swap characters to parry isn't infinite, but it is a lot. You're the only time you only run out of it is if there's like a really super aggressive boss that like does like multi-hit combo strings.
You basically recharge it pretty fast, from what I recall. There's I think it was like 6 charges, was it?
Yeah, pretty. Like, I think and it's like 6 to 8 charges. I forget.
Yeah, somewhere around there. It's pretty generous.
Yeah, I like I said, the only time you only really like see that run out is like when you start getting to like the harder content, but even then you don't really run out of it that quickly. It's only for like if you're facing multiple bosses and or like a big boss that's like super aggressive with its attack strings. And then like if you run out of that, the sparkles coming out are visually red. Sometimes enemies do have unparryable attacks that are red as well. But you can still dodge these, and there's like a dodge slowdown for properly dodging them, and you can still swap to the next character, but it won't do like an attack counter attack on them. I think there's only like really one or two times in the game where like I was really when one of my characters was like really close to dying, and that's because I just kind of played sloppily. I was tired. That's my excuse. But other than that, it's like a really, at this moment in time, a really, really simple game, which while there are interesting characteristics that some of the characters have, like one of the starting characters, Anbi, she has like this electric baton or electric sword, and like she has her EX attack is usually kind of lengthy, but it does a lot of days damage. But if you hit the EX attack like after the second or fourth attack, it'll come out faster. I'm trying to think of like other special mechanics. Ellen has like her main gimmick is her dashing attack. You do a charged attack after dashing to build up like charges on her basic attacks, so she does like increased ice damage on them. Like small stuff like that, makes them unique. But it's like, but the current content of the game isn't challenging enough on an inherent level. Like, it's fun to experiment, but there's nothing in the game that really is like too interesting from a battle design perspective to really warrant up like a change up in your gameplay. Like, you can the closest that you're gonna get in terms of like tech in this game is like some characters, like I believe Anbi has like a launcher as part of her just normal move set, and if you launch the enemy, you can quick swap to another character and continue that combo. It's like doing a combo juggle like in a Tekken Tag Tournament, where one character does the launcher, you swap in another character to continue the combo.
It's kind of like the same thing doing Genshin, but this is like the Genshin one's more, how do I say it? It's more manual. This one feels more like it's part of the system, so it feels more like this is what they want you to do, if you get what I'm saying. I'm not quite sure if I'm explaining it properly.
Mm-hmm.
Like even in like the other HoYoverse game, I feel like to get to the challenging content, it's like you have to get to like the real, like I don't know, like Spiral Abyss or the Memory of Chaos within like the first week, and that's when the game gets super challenging, like so hard. You had to be like pure min max to get it cleared. Then as like you get more roles and more characters later on, then it just becomes a bit like really easy. I guess it's like you're just trying to find like the right medium, because but like eventually it just becomes kind of like a mindless content where you could easily like auto everything. But like within like the first couple of weeks, that content is extremely challenging, right? So I'm not kind of sure if you're gonna play it, stick it long enough to like you could do all that hardcore endgame content.
I mean, like right now, I admittedly have the best in slot team. I did get the ice team in the game, so that I'm doing fine, but. But you know, but it's just one of those things where the gameplay itself, like the pillars of it, the building blocks of it, I don't know where they're gonna go for, because right now it's just compared to something like Wuthering Waves, which is we were talking about it earlier, how like the release of Wuthering Waves kind of highlights sort of almost the problems of Xenozone Zero. It kind of sucks because both of these games have something they do really well and something they really don't do really well, and they're completely inverse of each other. In Xenozone Zero, like the characters, like the environment, and like this kind of like the story and the plot of the game, and the setting is really interesting, and I enjoy like actually like listening to the character interactions and following the story. I think that that shit is awesome. Like the cutscenes in it are really really cool. Like you know they're
they got very, like a comic book kind of presentation in the beginning. Yeah. So
yeah, and yeah, they have some comic book scenes, but like the big cutscenes, like. The animation is really, you know, out of this world, pretty much. They're very expressive in their movements. But, you know, but the gameplay itself, like we were mentioning, is, it's okay. It's not like, it gets repetitive fast, especially when you're going through, like, the early parts of the game. Like, it feels like you're just, like, button mashing mindlessly. It eventually becomes more meaningful in your team composition and building. When you get to like later Hollow Zero zones, which is kind of like the roguelike mode of the game, where it gets progressively more difficult, the deeper you go. But on the other hand, Wuthering Waves, everything outside the combat is dog shit. Like the story is bad. Even the 1.1 stuff, it's like better, but not really amazing. All the scenes and the character interactions, they're awful. But the combat itself, really good, you know? Because...
Yeah, I don't mind that. You know, there's games I played, I love everything about it, except for the story, but I'll still play it. It's like Fire Emblem Fates. It has, like, the worst story written to man, but it's like, the gameplay is god tier, so am I gonna, like, just hate on this game just because the story sucked? It's like, well... It's like, you don't have to play a game for its story all the time. I feel like the story, having a good story is like a bonus, you know what I'm saying? Uh-huh. It's like the gameplay matters first, but mm-hmm. you know, if the story's more, like, good, then now you have like an even god-tier game. But if the story is like terrible, it'll drag the game down a bit, but not bad enough that you won't play it, I guess. That's how I see it, right?
I'm with you. Some of my favorite games have like crappy stories, and I don't really care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that too. So yeah, they kind of exist at odds with each other, because like in Wuthering Waves, its combat is very involved, and there's kind of challenging content in the game that like the tactical holograms, which are like very like challenging like bosses. They get progressively harder, like the you know the higher level they are. They have like new attacks like at certain higher level thresholds that you have to learn how to deal with, and construct teams behind and so forth. And the combat in that system. In that game also has three characters, but the way that like you swap them out isn't like Wuthering Waves, where there is a perfect dodge system. There is a parry, but like the parries are very like hitting them is actually pretty challenging for a lot of the bosses, because they're like there's an inner circle that comes in, but that circle is kind of deceptive because it's more of a timer of like when the attack is coming, but the actual parry hit depends on like where your weapon is on the field, like its hitbox is and so forth. So
I'm just gonna ask, like, so you sunk way more time into this, obviously. was like the parry system more like FF16 where they're like trying to hit someone's like weapon at the same time, was it for you or something?
Kind of for Wuthering?
Yeah.
So like you see that circle incoming and you're basically trying to hit their attack with your own attack, pretty much. So you have to time it manually yourself. And there'll be some characters that have delayed swings. So if you match the circle's timing with theirs, it will probably be unsuccessful because it depends on your weapon's hitbox hitting them during their attack and not just matching that circle alone.
Yeah, because most people say like Final Fantasy 16, even though the game is really easy, but the parry, like the timing for it, it's extremely strict. A lot of people have trouble doing it.
Yeah, so, Wuthering definitely has some strict parry timings that like most people just do just dodge instead of parry, and so forth. And Wuthering Waves also has has separate meters for like a circular meter that fills up, and like once that circular meter is filled up, the incoming character that you swap into does a lot of like stun damage, and also has their own like unique like intro attack that has different effects for that, along with other character unique resource meters. So for example, like my main team is like Jinxi, Yinlin, and Verena in that game, and they're all very, very different from one another, but the way that they the character chemistry and how they build resources for one another is way more interesting than like what Zenless has at the moment, where Jinxi pretty much her main gimmick is after you do 4 basic attacks in her combo string, she gains access to like this almost Super Saiyan mode. And if you do 4 basic attack strings in that Super Saiyan mode, you can like summon her dragon. It'll fire off like a big energy blast. It'll do a shit ton of like damage. It has an AoE effect too. And she has like a her own meter that like the higher that meter is, the more damage that final dragon blast will be. Like it can do an absurd amount of damage, like full meter. But building that meter is slow if you're just playing Jinxi alone. So you have to go swap to other characters that are off element, like Yinlin, which is electricity. She has her own mechanics of like where her heavy attack, once she builds up her resource, does an AoE attack and has like a mark on all the enemies. When you hit them with that mark, it'll bring down lightning on them. And you can even swap to another character and that mark will still be on them. And when you hit them with that character, it'll still bring down lightning and so forth. So every time you attack with Yinlin, because he's off element and does like these a lot of like multi-hitting attacks that come out fast, it'll actually charge the resource meter for Jinxi faster because he's off element. And it's because another character is like doing that as well. And Verena is kind of like the healer of the group, where she builds up like these photosynthesis charges. So like when she does her heavy attack or midair attack, she does heals, expends those charges, and so forth. So you're kind of hot swapping in between different characters to build up resources for them. So in Jinxi's case, you know, hot swapping to other characters, getting them going back to Jinxi, is good because she's like kind of like the big nuker. But you can get into her Super Saiyan form right away if you go back to her from a character who has like full resources to do the intro attack. If you go back into her with her intro attack, she doesn't have to do her 4 basic attacks into Super Saiyan. She can just go to Super Saiyan right away. You know, it's like very more intricate mechanics. One of the more involved fighting or action games in the genre, like Devil May Cry Bayonetta. It's not as complex as them, but the chemistry is there to kind of vary up your gameplay and think about, you know, your character rotations more intricately. Unlike Zenless at the moment, where, you know, it is a bit mindless, like, you know, for a good chunk of it. And, you know, even as you're going through like the deeper parts of the end game, it still feels mindless on some level because everything just feels automated and, you know, fake in a way where like it looks very flashy, it looks very cool, the sound design is on point, but the actual involvement of what the character or what the player is doing isn't really that, you know, it doesn't really matter that much. You can kind of get away with it because, you know, it's just because the system is so heavily favors the player at the end of the day. Unlike in Wuthering Waves, where like if you're just sticking on one character, and not really playing around with the resources, you're just everything will just be longer, and you're just kind of like not, you know, everything will just take longer to kill. So, you know, it's kind of weird in that way. And also, Wuthering Waves has the Echo system, which is kind of like a Pokemon that you can summon as well.
I think, like, the Echo system is probably my least favorite thing about WooA. I think it's extremely grindy, in my opinion, of making it work.
The one thing that Wuthering Waves need to do with the Echo system is, like, so every 5 to 10 levels, you level up these Echoes, these Pokemons, in Wuthering Waves. You can tune them and add more substats into them up to like level 25, so you can get like a maximum of 5 substats on them. But this will roll in a small pool of like substats that you can get. You can get like defense, HP, attack percent up. But the ones that people care about most is crit rate up and crit damage percent up for them. And, you know, getting perfect rolls on those substats is kind of a big deal in that game to really maximizing your builds and damage in that game. But it's all randomized when you tune them. So if Kuro Games implemented a system to individually re-roll bad substats that you got on Echoes, I think that whole system would be 100 times better. Because as it is, obviously it's designed for the content to grind on, right? So people who really are mega sweat in that game, they'll continue to grind Echoes and then level them up so to get hopefully get the perfect substats on that. Which is, yeah, in that sense, it fucking sucks. I 100% agree with you. So that's why I hope down the line the developers will consider implementing a system to individually reroll substats for them, and that would be like amazing.
You know, that's not even in Genshin. I mean, actually, it took like 4 years to add a system like that in Epic 7. And the Epic 7 system, it's like, it's very expensive to reroll gear, so you're just kind of like, it's like, if you really think that this gear like fucked up with rolling, that it's like you have to resort to this basically. But you know, yeah, it's like you know, I hope more games put it in there, but you know, it's like a lot of times they don't, right?
I know because that's the grind right there. If you had that, then why would people continue to play the game?
Yeah, it's like their other source of income. Because some people, like the whales, like once they have no characters to roll on, they basically spend all their money on resources to grind so that they could have like the ultimate gear to show off and flex on how strong they are, right?
Yeah, which
is kind of terrible, but what can you do?
Yeah. So I mean, that's like kind of like just the early impressions on Zenless, and you know, I'll continue playing both Wuthering and Zenless for now and see where it goes. I enjoy both of them for different reasons. They definitely have interesting things going on with them. It also helps that like I just have really good teams in both of them at the moment, but I don't know. I think Zenless has a lot of cool things going on for it, and it also just helps that it has like the VHS tapes and the vibe,
nostalgia. We still got VHS player.
Yeah. So I don't, and also like I guess I forgot to mention this. Like in Zenless Zone Zero, there's a lot of like these TV sections, and they're ostensibly like the dungeon exploration of the game. Like, think like Voice of Cards or Dungeon Encounters, where it's like an overworld view, but like you're exploring it like a dungeon pretty much. So like there's like there'll be some dungeon mechanics like flipping switches and like pushing boxes towards things to unlock the next point of them. And they're very much they're just straight up dungeons in the game. But like I don't necessarily hate like this part of the game, but they're also samey, you know. They're all not to say like the mechanics going on, but like what they look like, because they all have the same TV format. All the creatures in that overworld look the same. You just run into them, you go fight them. And like just the environment is all just that same TV environment, and like nothing about it like is really visually interesting. There are interesting gimmicks they implemented to these, like for example, like the rogue machines that I described earlier in chapter 2 that you have to go retrieve. Eventually they'll go join you, and then for like another dungeon that you go to, you have to like operate them via switches. So there'll be like another plane in that dungeon where like you see like these big gigantic machines where you have to navigate them like left or right through switches to like break open walls and clear out enemies and so forth. And then there was even like one that like is almost like a tower defense section. So like they do interesting things mechanically to vary up the like the TV dungeon aspect, but visually and navigating, they all feel very samey, which sucks.
I heard that's like the worst aspect of the game during like the pre-beta or whatever it is. I'm not sure if they changed it a lot, but I heard people are more positive about this feature now or something. But I heard they toned
it down because they got so much negative feedback on what earlier betas have. I can't say for how much they've toned it down and how much they had early on. I don't know, but.
Yeah.
But you encounter it so much in like the, obviously there's like a whole exploration side quest that all have it. The Hollow Zero roguelike has it. A lot of the story section, like a lot of the sections of the game all have it. And it's like it just the amount of it feels tiresome. Like it's not like in other RPGs where like, oh, getting like a well realized dungeon is only once in a while, you know. Like it's like well paced in like other games because you only see them once in a while. It's not like every other fucking mission that it's like, oh, here we go. I have to go navigate the TV again and then go to the next side quest. Oh, I have to go navigate the TV again. It's like, like okay. So and that this game can't quite, you know, just I don't know. I just think it's conceptually cool. But they do it way too much, and it kind of gets
a bit tiresome, exhausting. I guess.
Yeah.
I don't blame you, really. But yeah. It's like, what do you think? Is this going to be the gacha game that you'll stick in for the rest of this month?
I don't know. I mean, we'll see. I will play them until I stop having fun. That's my policy on these games. I will play Wuthering and Zenless until I stop having fun. Right now, they're fun. I think they're... they both have potential, you know, but it's I won't make any promises of how long I'm gonna stick with them. I don't know if I'm gonna like if I'm gonna be like loyal to them like a year from now. It's like, yeah, honestly, I think the longest game I played like before I dropped it was like Fate Grand Order, really.
I think
like 2 to 3 years. Another Eden I stuck with, but it wasn't that like it. But it was like more. But I don't think I stuck with it for like a whole year. I think it was like very close to a year. Dragalia I stuck with for a long time too.
I think there's a different gacha game. I think we're story based gacha players now. I think we're stuck with Heaven Burns Red pretty soon.
Oh yeah, we'll talk about that. I mean, if I were a story based gacha gamer. I would have dropped Wuthering Waves. If I would have dropped Wuthering Waves already, so yeah.
So like, okay, maybe that's a lie then.
Like Wuthering is like if its combat ever gets not fun in that game, or like there's like no new interesting like things going on in that game, then like I'll probably drop it. I'll be like whatever. But right now it's okay. But I have no hope for its story. It's not like I'm playing Wuthering Waves because I have any hope that its story is going to get good. You know, there's no fucking way it is.
I think when the story leaves a bad first impression, it never recovers of whether you like it or not. You know,
I'm trying to think what needs to happen to the story for it to get interesting. And I'm thinking just like, I don't know. Just like wipe out everything and redo it from the start.
I'm not quite sure it's a translation quality. I wonder if like Like, I heard they went back and redid some of the voice that was, like, terrible from 1.1.
It's not even that. It's not like, it contributes, yeah, like, the English script being dry and the English voice acting being dry is whatever. I can switch it to Japanese voices anytime and be fine with it, and that'd be okay.
Yeah, but maybe they went back and revised the script. I don't know.
It's not even, like, yeah, it's a fundamental story that's happening. It's, like, it's so uninteresting. That's the thing. It's not, sure, the dry script doesn't help. And sure, like, the whatever voice acting doesn't help. But the main fundamental thing that's not interesting is, like, the actual events itself that's happening, you know? Like, it's just whatever. It's just whatever. Yeah, so that's Zenless for now. Just first impressions. I don't know where that game will go. The other game that I'll speak briefly about is Nexon put out a new free-to-play game on the market. But it's not for mobile, though. It is called The First Descendant. This has been lighting the Steam charts. This has reached about 240,000 players and retained most of that still. It is, and I think it's also available on consoles. I think it's on PlayStation and Xbox as well. It is basically a third-person looter shooter that takes inspirations more so from Warframe with a little bit of Destiny. It is very much that kind of game where you have this hub base and you go deploy into zones and then you go do open world activity or zone activities, open zone activities to go progress the storyline. And each of the characters are like the Warframes where they all have all distinct kits that all have different roles. So, for example, the three starting characters that you have, one is like your standard character, which has grenades, so can vacuum in enemies and so forth. One is like an ice lady that can shoot ice shards, conjure up good AoE damage, like a blizzard, and has a movement skill that puts her feet on ice, and anyone who is trailing behind her gets ice damage. And then another character, the third starting character, is a tank that is basically has the bubble shield from Destiny, like the Titan, I think. And it can deploy walls and is very much the character that's all in on defense, pretty much. And then there's other characters that you can you get throughout the main story, but in Warframe fashion, you have to get the materials. So some of the materials will be given to you by doing main story quests. And one of the first characters that you unlock is this woman named Bunny, and she's an electric based character, but the effect of her kit is all movement based. So the more you move, the more effective her kit will be. She's like the gotta go fast character, pretty much. It does electric damage. And then there's all sorts of other characters in the game that I didn't get to try out, but I know there's this one other character that has a berserk state. There's another character that I want that it's that is focused on providing a lot of ammo. And then when it comes to character building and weapon customizing this game, the loot that drops from enemies, of guns of varying rarities. There's also modules that can drop from them for both your character and for the three guns that you can equip. And these modules will be crit rate up, crit damage up. It'll provide it'll infuse your bullets with a certain type of element. Some will be penetration rate, accuracy up, all sorts of modules like that. And so you're kind of min-maxing your stats based off of these modules that can be upgraded. And that's kind of the game is okay, in terms of the movement feel. I really like the movement and the gunplay in the game. You do have a grappling hook, but it's not really that versatile. It does allow for some platforming segments. They're not the most fluid. It's kind of stiff, but it's serviceable. When it comes to comparing the movement styles of Warframe and The First Descendant, I think probably Warframe probably still edges out in terms of like the movement feel, because Warframe allows you for sliding, and it's more parkourish because you're basically space ninjas in Warframe. But this one is still, you know, not bad. And it's a very, very standard type of looter shooter where you're kind of going through the motions in the story as it, and then you're just going to the next marker, do the stuff, go out to the next spot part, do the stuff.
I saw a review on this game from Geo. What's the site he writes for again? Is it Inverse or is it Digital Trends? Digital Trends. And he basically said, first of all, he said this game's like story is nonsense.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Second, he basically said the first Ascendant is a fidget spinner. It spins. What do you want? What else do you want?
Exactly. Yeah, that's a good analogy. It is your standard looter shooter experience. It doesn't do anything too crazy. I mean, like the interesting part about like this game is like there are some like boss battle raids, and when you can highlight like the weak points in it, and then you shoot those like those blue weak points until they turn yellow, and when they turn yellow you can grapple onto them and you can bash these parts and rip them off when you see them highlighted and so forth, and you know, and it's kind of like a group effort, but when you get to the end of the game, like from what I'm hearing from you know, from friends of mine who really got into it, it is very much that sort of like you're repeating content to get something to drop, whether it's like materials to go build a new Descendant or Warframe, or whether you're trying to farm like a certain module that has a low drop rate. I know there are like some ways to manipulate the drop rate so you turn on like modifiers that work against you for a higher drop rate, so you're to make missions more difficult, but you'll get a higher drop rate as a result of that. But it's very much your end goal in that game is to grind the fuck out of it if you're not paying for it, pretty much. So like if you want like a certain character and you don't want to pay for it, you can go spend 1,000 hours to go grind the parts that you need to go optimize your team or your character and get materials to unlock that character. And of course, like in Warframe fashion, once you have the materials and all the things you need to go unlock it, you go to the merchant to do that, and then they'll be like, all right, we'll see you like in 12 hours and they'll be unlocked, but you can go spend the paid currency to accelerate this if you want, and it's that kind of game, you know. So it's whatever, you know, it's not gonna set anything on fire. I mean it does, if you're really into that, if you like seeing the numbers go up, it is that game.
Yeah, I'm that kind of guy, but only for Grand Blue though. I love seeing my millions of damage and throwing all over my face. Yeah, that's just me, I guess.
But I think, like, you know, but it is a nice alternative to like if anyone was like itching for like that Warframe loop, but feel like that Warframe is too impenetrable for newer players. You know, First Descendant might be, you know, that game, because as far as I can tell, like the monetization is annoying, but if you want to unlock characters immediately and unlock the skins for the characters, right? But for purely gameplay stuff, it's like you can get by without spending a cent if you're willing to put in the time, though. That's the thing. If you're okay with just like sticking to a game and grinding a game for hours and hours and hours and to obtain stuff, so you don't have to spend a cent on it, that this is your game, you know. I don't know if I can stick with this. I played it for about 8 to 9 hours, and I'm like I don't know. I feel like I've had my fill. I might go back to it, but it's just like, I'm like, it's okay. I don't know if it'll have legs though. That's the thing. Just don't know if it has the legs, but we'll see. So far, it seems to have it's found a healthy user base. But I'm sure that'll, you know, drop in the coming week or so. It's just, it's whatever. It's like Adam said, like according to Geo, it's a fidget spinner. It has one goal and it does that. There you go. So, Yeah, that's kind of what my takeaway was on the first Descendant. It's okay. It's okay. Before we get into news, like I said earlier, James is at Anime Expo, and he's written up already some previews of what he's played. He's played a bit of Gundam Breaker 4. He's played Phantom Brave the Lost Hero, which is, you know, the incoming sequel to Phantom Brave that's coming next year. He got to play, get a hands-on with it. And he got to play Raid Nodus, which is the next action RPG coming from Furyu. And that'll be coming later this year in the West. So go check those out if you want to know more about those titles. So the first big news story of this week is was right when Anime Expo started. As soon as the doors busted wide open, YoStar had an announcement to make. They are publishing the turn-based free-to-play RPG Heaven Burns Red. So Heaven Burns Red has been in Japan for about 2 years now. It released in February 2022. Over in Japan, it was developed by Right Flyer Studios and Key. And one of its main appeals is that Jun Maeda from Key is in charge of the main scenario of it. So it's a very, very narrative-driven game. Maeda worked on, highly acclaimed visual novels from Key, including Canon, Air, and Clannad, some of the most revered works in that genre. And
Japanese... still work on it? Because I remember back then, he wrote like a story that wasn't like up to his usual quality, and people shit on him hard, and he just kind of like stopped working for it for a while. So
I don't know. This is I don't follow Heaven Burns Red drama or what's going on in the Japan release, but he worked on the main scenario for this game. I don't know if there was some drama where he fell off or he's still working on it, but with the large content of Heaven Burns Red, he was in charge of that main scenario. And this is the first time he's in that role, that main scenario writer role, for the first time since like 2007's Little Buster. I hear a lot of good things from people who play this game, like for the story alone. Like, people really like the story of this game and really jive with its cast. The setup is there's this extraterrestrial alien force, life forms called the Phage, and normal contemporary weaponry, as we know it, doesn't affect them. The only ones who can fight back this threat is this special all-girls squadron that all have a unique weapon called a Seraph. And these are the only things that can damage and ultimately eliminate the Phage, and so forth. So they haven't released any details of a release date. Obviously, it'll be coming to iOS and Android. We do know that, like, obviously, this is fundamentally a mobile game first. But I think the question remains, like, if this is getting a Steam release, because it's Japanese, Japanese version did get a Steam release later in 2022. So I think everyone's a lot of people are wondering, hey, is the English release also going to be released on Steam as well? So. That's yet to be determined and yet to be announced. We'll see if they do. If it does come to Steam, I'll be interested in trying. I don't know if I care much if it's on just mobile alone. They announced some of the main cast members in its English reveal trailer. One of the traits that every girl in this all-girl squadron has is like they all have like unique talent to them. So you have like some of the descriptions for the characters in that trailer are like the self-proclaimed psychic from the Kansai region, or like a genius hacker from this hacktivist organization. And then one of the descriptions for the ladies was she's a serial killer and an FPS gamer, FPS gamer girl with a split personality. It's like, okay, all right, that's normal. That's great.
Oh, so lovely.
Awesome. I might check that out. We'll see. I don't know. I usually like Key's stuff, but so that was kind of the big announcement from Anime Expo on day one in terms of RPG news. Another thing that was sort of leaked by accident, but officially announced by Exceed Games and Marvelous Europe. They are releasing East Memoir, The Oath in Fal'Ghana in early 2025, for PS5, PS4, and Nintendo Switch. Adam, remind me, what is Ys Memoir, the Oathen Fel'Ghana?
Okay, so Ys, the Oathen Fel'Ghana, is one of the very best Ys games. If you have not played it, you should either play the existing version or this new version. It is a remake of Ys 3 Wanderers from Ys, which is like back on the Super Nintendo or the one of the... Was it TurboGrafx?
88. Ys 88. That's when it first happened, okay.
Okay. Don't play the Super Nintendo version. That version's bad. Anyways.
I beat the Super Nintendo version. That is literally so hard. I don't even know how people can beat this game. You literally need it, like, save states, and even then it takes hours. That's how brain perfect it is that you need to beat it.
Okay, so basically, the Ys, the Oathen Fel'Ghana, was a PC game, and then it got a PSP port back in... So the original game was, like, 2005. The PSP port was, like, 2008, 9, somewhere around there. The PSP port added some new things. I think the portraits changed a little bit. It added voice acting. Then this version here, this is basically a remaster of that game. It's coming out for PlayStation 5, PlayStation 4, Nintendo Switch. It has new like character art, like updated artwork for portraits. You can use the older fashion of portraits if you want. It has both English and Japanese voices in the Western release. Adol now speaks, at least in combat. He's got like battle barks or whatnot. I don't
I
think
play
he
a little
has,
bit
like...
of the Japanese version, and he does talk.
Does he have like full lines of dialogue?
No, it'll be like, remember that back then it'll be the narrator talking for him, but this time it'll be like Adol talking. What I'm saying?
Rather than saying Adol told Elena this, now he'll actually say something. Okay. They added a few other like quality of life things. I remember reading that there was like things like you can adjust how fall damage works and a few things like that. But also there's also a turbo mode, which makes sense for turn-based games to speed things up, but turbo mode in this game, I don't know, it's kind of funny. Like awesome. You could fight the boss, who's pretty tough, or you could fight the boss at double speed if you want.
You basically get slaughtered in three hits. Like, why would you turn this on?
Well, what if you memorize the fight by heart and it's just like, okay, I'm just going through the motions. You just move this like this and attack at this time. Like, come on. What are you doing?
Okay, so play it in nightmare mode, so double mode.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And then it becomes a fucking bullet hell and try to like, dodge everything.
It's that easy, dude. So, yeah. If you really think about it, if you just press the correct buttons in the right directions, you can beat any game, you know? So.
When you said it's that easy, I was thinking, it's that easy.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Don't do that. Don't make that the podcast title. People hate it.
I was wondering. I was debating. Anyways. this is coming out next year, which kind of feels like a ways away, really. I mean, I know it's several months, but...
I feel that's pretty long. This game's been out for
It came out for Switch last year in Japan, and then it came out for PlayStation 4 and 5 this year, like a couple months ago. We talked about it in the previous podcast when it was sort of leaked. Next year. As far as I don't expect the PC version to get updated because it's not really it's more like a console port with some enhancements. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
XSEED does do sometimes interesting updates. Like, they backported the voice dialogue into the PC port from the PSP port. They did do that. Do that sometimes. It's basically just a console port of Ys, the Oathen Fel'Ghana, which has been on Steam for several years now, with a few updates. It's a great game. Excellent music. It's a good, like, how long is this game? Like, 10 hours? It's not very long.
And
I think my clear data is like 7 hours. I think
it's not even 10 hours. Yeah,
I think there's even like a speedrun trophy that asks you like to beat it at a certain time, I think.
Yeah, but it's the type of game you can beat in a weekend. It's very cool, kind of very to the point.
It's very action packed.
Yeah, it's of that style of East games. It came after like Napishtim. It kind of like it's a little bit fine tuned from there.
It's like the most refined of that.
Yeah, it's really good.
That engine.
So, yeah, it's a cool game. Play it if you haven't. Play the new console ports if you haven't. You know, ports are good. I like ports.
And for East fans like who are fond of Oathen Fel'Ghana, you know, there should be a new physical release of this as well for the Switch and PS5. through Xseed. So they have like a postcard set, a microfiber soundtrack, diorama, keychain, stuff like that. So and just a big ass box if you just want more Ultim Volcana merch in your room. So yeah, Ultim Volcana rules. So good shit.
It's not the original Japanese release, which has like, was it this entire big ass box, and then you have like 10 music CDs of all different arrangements from all like their other ports. It's just like, it's really insane, actually. I'll take it. I just wonder why it took so long, though.
Better late than never. Speaking of better late than never, I mean, not really late. An official announcement from News America themselves at their Trails panel at Anime Expo. They have revealed that they are bringing The Legend of Heroes Trails Through Daybreak 2 to the West in early 2025 for PS5, PS4, Switch, and PC. Unfortunately, this announcement did get leaked last week through PlayStation, but they officially let it be known. And early 2025 is a good time frame. They're very, very close now to finally catching up to the Japanese releases of the Trails series. A long time in the making. And if they manage to somehow bring Kainu Kiseki to the West like later next year, or even early 2026, that'd be awesome. That'd be
pretty good, you know. I would say like people got no rights to complain anymore. We have caught up, basically.
Yeah, I think the bigger news that came out of this is the Steam page for Trails Through Daybreak 2 went up, and it does, you know, confirm that
more patching system.
Yeah, they're not. So they're doing this with East 10 as well. They're not doing the patches with East 10, but this one just solidifies it. Where, unlike with The Legend of Nindayuda and Trails Through Daybreak 1, where they released the PC port of it way earlier than the English release of it, with Nayuda and Trails Through Daybreak 1, like with Trails Through Daybreak 1, they released that PC port like last March 2023. And then they later updated that PC port just like a day or two ago with the English patch on it. The unforeseen consequences at the time when they made this decision was pretty catastrophic in the PC side of things, because as people can freely check, the Trails Through Daybreak 1 does not appear in the popular new releases page at the Steam front page, because this English release was only done through a patch. It's not a new entry. It's not through, you know, they're not officially like, you know, getting out of early access or anything. Nothing like that. So it does not notify people who have that game on their wish list that now the English release is out, and it doesn't show that popular new releases. Same thing with Nayuta last year, which really, really did not do well, it seemed like, from the Steam charts of the English release. Versus same thing, it did not notify people through their wish list, and it didn't show up the popular new releases tab on the Steam front page when that came out. So with East 10 and Trails Through Daybreak 2, Nice America is just holding off on that release till the English release is ready and done, and we'll just release it just like a normal game. So so when East 10 and Trails Through Daybreak 2 comes out, it'll notify people who have that there on their wish list, hey, this is ready to buy, go fucking buy it if you want. And also when it comes out, when those two games come out, it'll be at the Steam front page at the new releases section, so people won't miss it when it's there as well. So it was a brief, interesting experiment, but it did not pay off ultimately in the end. That is a tiny bit of a bummer just behind the scenes for review purposes, because
it's very handy to have.
Actually, Adam, I'll let you explain how this worked for like, because of the beta branches and so forth.
Okay, so basically, for reviewing Trails Through Daybreak, if you wanted to review the PC version, basically, NAS America just gives you the beta branch code to give you the English patch early. And that code is not unique. You can just share that with whoever, and anyone could buy the game, like legally buy it, and just apply the patch pre-release and get it. So some people did that.
Yeah. So, you know, it was just very, very easy, just like it more widespread, obviously. So, but now it'll be, the access will be, you know, more limiting in this one. But it's okay, because it's way more healthy for them in the end. So, Trails to Daybreak 2, early 2025. That'll be exciting to see happen. This one came out of nowhere. This is kind of an interesting one. East Asia Soft is bringing the dungeon crawler RPG Tokyo Clan Pool to the West in 2024 for Switch and PC. So when I saw it, I was like, Tokyo Clan Pool sounds vaguely familiar.
It's
from like
Vita
some
game, isn't it?
Yeah. So from ancient memory. So Tokyo Clan Pool was initially released in Japan on October 2017 as a Vita exclusive, and this is finally coming west through publisher East Asia Soft. And then, you know, they've been working with Compile Heart and Idea Factory with recent titles as well. Like,
yeah, they did a few. They did a few Mugen Souls games. They did they did one of the dungeon crawlers. I forget what they're called.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, Moero Crystal.
Yeah, the Moero game.
Yeah. And so yeah, I mean, that's just like a cool thing to finally see get localized and an official English release in the West. People can buy this a physical copy of this. It'll be sold through Play Asia. There's also a limited copies. They might be already run out, but there were limited edition copies that were only made 3,000 copies of these, and those pre-orders went up on July 4th. I don't know if any are still available, but that limited edition includes, you know, the game, a collector's box, manual, certificate, art book, OST, poster, and stickers. You know, it's a unexpected localization. It's very much a first-person dungeon crawler RPG. It's kind of interesting because you play as the prime minister in this game, and part of the game system is like getting approval ratings up from the citizenship. And if it's too low, then your entire cabinet will resign. You know, be a good prime minister, I guess. Toho Spell Carnival is heading west in 2024 for PS5, PS4, and Switch. Adam, you have the details because those things aren't officially published yet.
Okay, so Toho Spell Carnival, I don't know much about Toho. It's a bullet hell strategy RPG, is what they call it. It's developed by Sting. It came out in Japan just last month, and it's coming out in the West later this year by Idea Factory.
Did you say it's developed by Sting?
Yes, it's Sting.
Yep.
Look, that's your, what was it, Knights in the Nightmare or whatever.
Yeah, all the Department of Heaven stuff. Or Zach's favorite game, Hyperdimension Noir.
Really?
Love that game. I don't know. I think he liked it.
Yeah. You can go ask him in the Discord.
Too scared to ask him.
Idea Factory or Compile Heart released this in Japan earlier this year, so their Western branch, Idea Factory International, is releasing it in the West this year, later this year. PlayStation 5, PlayStation 4, Nintendo Switch. They have special editions on their website, so on.
Okay. All right. And then the other announcement from their Anime Expo is they are bringing over Death and Request Code Z to the West in 2025.
So this game is I've actually looked. Some press releases call it a spin-off, and some press releases call it the third entry. So it's the third entry spin-off.
They distinctly call it a spin-off because whenever they did the list of upcoming projects from them, they called it a spin-off. And then
English press release calls it the third entry.
What the fuck? Well, I mean, it's technically the third Death End Request game, but it's not part of the main list. I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah, we get it. We're on the same page.
Whatever.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is... I don't know if this has a date in Japan yet. I don't... One second. September 19th. So a couple months away in Japan. Where the other games were like... visual novel turn-based games or command-based games. You played these, right, Chow? Or at least one of them?
I played the first one. It's an RPG. And it's they're turn-based. Like, delicious. Yeah.
Now, this one is not turn-based. It's like a roguelike, an action game.
Like a real-time dungeon roguelike or something like that.
Yeah, so it's got so that's why they call it a spin-off, is because it's got a different kind of gameplay style to it. It's still written by like the Death or the Corpse Party author, Makoto Kaduin. Coming out next year in the West. This year for Japan, next year in the West for PlayStation 5, 4, and Nintendo Switch. So.
All right.
Yeah.
I talk about the first one. Like, the first one had a very good storyline, so I just wish it was just like a visual novel, because the gameplay was the worst part of it, because usually compile heart games are like, the gameplay are like, ugh.
Well, this one is no longer turn-based, it's roguelike. Does that make it better or worse?
I think the worst part is, like, sometimes, like, the characters are using glitches to, like, change the game genre. It's like, I'm gonna change it to, like, FPS game to, like, do, like, this massive damage to this boss or something like that. Oh. And you're like, these things feel very gimmicky and bad. Yeah. And you're like, no. It's like, maybe the gameplay's better? I don't know. I might give it a shot, but I don't know. Like, the first game, like, nobody wanted to review the second game because they weren't, like, really invested in the gameplay. It's like, yeah, we loved the story, but the gameplay was just, like, whatever, right?
I like the visual novel segments, but, yeah, playing the game fucking sucks.
Idea Factory does have a few other announcements that are basically being announced at the same time as these two. Mm-hmm. They're not relevant to us, though. I don't know what these are, so I'm just going to name them. Battlefield Waltz. I think that's Otome. Temirana, The Lucky Princess and the Tragic Knights. I think that's also Otome. They're also revealing the limited edition to 9 RIP, which I think is also Otome. Compile Heart does a ton of Otome. Like, so much that actually Axis Games has to do a bunch of the localizations on those rather than Idea Factory. They're also announcing the last game, Neptunia Riders versus Dagoos?
Mm-hmm.
I remember seeing this somewhere else for the Japanese announcement. It's a Neptunia game, but not an RPG. It's more of like an action racing game or something.
Yeah, I saw this in several from Mitsu issues. I don't know.
But wait, if Neptunia can make a racing game, surely Bloodborne can make a Mario Kart game. Bloodborne Kart. April Fool's
I don't see any flaws in this logic.
Hmm.
So basically, Idea Factory is going to be announcing a bunch of games quite literally like an hour from when we are recording, and we covered the two RPG ones of those announcements.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right. Yesterday, as of the day of this recording, Bandai Namco held their Summer Showcase event at Anime Expo. They had a lot to talk about. Most of it not relevant to us, but they showed off new characters for that Sword Art Online Fractured Daydream game. There's like two characters from like a movie.
That's like the first Sword Art Online game we haven't like covered in a while, because it's the first one that's not really RPG. It's more like a multiplayer.
Raid. Yeah, it's like a multiplayer raid sim most.
Yeah.
They also showed off some Mr. Satan gameplay for Sparking Zero. It's not relevant to us, it's a fighting game. But it was nice to see, you know, the English voice actor of Mr. Satan there. It was his birthday. Happy birthday.
Oh, Chris Rager, I think is his name?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And the one thing relevant to us was they got to the Gundam Breaker 4 segment, you know, introducing the game, you know, to the crowd, because for those who don't know. And they also unveiled that they'll have a Pac-Man crossover stage with decals and rewards, so having a collab with Pac-Man there, which is, you know, sure, why not? Fun.
I saw they had a Chibi Gundam show up on the stage.
That's right, they had Chibi Gundam and then Pac-Man.
And then Chibi Gundam's like shoulders falling apart.
Chibi Gundam's trying really hard, okay?
No, I'm learning like AX information while on the go, and I heard they have Gundam Crocs for like pre-order if you line up over that panel.
You buy Gundam Crocs?
I was trying to get someone to order me one or something. I heard they're like kid size or something, so it probably wouldn't fit me.
Yeah, because you know, Gundam is for kids, Chow.
No. I don't know how dropping a space colony into Australia is considered a kid's show.
That's a kid's show. So that's fun. I wonder if they're going to do more collabs with other Namco properties with Gundam Breaker 4. Imagine like a Tails collab with that. I don't know. Gundam Breaker 4 with a Tails stage. And they also previously before Anime Expo started, they also announced that Gundam Breaker 4 will be holding an open network test on running from July 18th to 21. So if you're interested in trying out Gundam Breaker 4, there's only for the console version, so only on PlayStation and Switch. And there's not going to be no open beta for the PC. Once again, PC players shafted. That's okay. Other than that, and then the last surprise announcement that's not relevant to us at the Bandai Namco showcase was a new Bleach game, a new Bleach console game for PS5, PS4, Xbox Series, and PC called Bleach Rebirth of Souls. And I'm like, is it going to be sick?
Yeah, like, so for a moment, you wonder, like, I wonder if this is going to be like a Dragon Ball Z Kakarot, like,
yeah.
where it's like just going through the story of Bleach in like an RPG-ish story mode game. And nope, it's not really. It's just another arena fighter.
It's just fighting. I have no idea who the hell this company is. Tamsuck.
Tamsuck
does a bunch of Senran Kagura or Neptunia spinoffs. So
yeah, they did. They also do Oni Chanbara. Oni Chanbara games. They did like the Utamare Rumono Zan.
Oh yeah, games. Those two.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we need James here because I think only James plays San, but I know Onichi.
I played other Onichanbara and some of the Senran Kagura games, and like they're not like great action games. I mean, like Shinobi and Estival Versus were like okay, but everything else that like Tamsoft pretty much does for like action games is like not good. I can't speak of the Underwater Rear Romano games. The other ones like Onichanbara fucking suck. And it's not just like the fan service aspects. Like I don't care about those. It's just like gameplay feel for action wise. Those are not good. So you know, once I saw Tamsoft was working on this, it's like, oh, it's like an arena fighter, and it's Tamsoft. I'm like, I'm good. I'm good.
Okay,
it's
so over. For those that are keeping track, last year at Anime Expo, the Bandai Namco surprise announcement. Do you remember?
Mm-hmm. I remember.
Yeah. Do you remember, Chow?
Which one?
Bandai Namco's surprise announcement at last year's Anime Expo.
This is supposed to be it?
No. Here's my point. Here's my point. Last year's surprise announcement was Jujutsu Kaisen Arena Fighter. Curse Clash is what I think it was called.
Yeah,
and that game was like one of the lowest scoring games of the last 12 months or whatever. Even fans of that property don't like that game, I guess. And now this year's surprise announcement is a Bleach Arena Fighter, which I don't know, maybe it'll be good for an Arena Fighter. I don't know. But we're starting to keep track of what Bandai Namco actually decides to announce.
Yeah, what if this game is actually fucking sick and it's like the best game ever?
What if you're wondering if the Bleach game will be?
Yeah, what are the 0.001% chance is like the sickest game ever, and then you gotta take it all back.
Because I remember people speculating what could be announced here. Probably not Tails. I actually think Tails is kind of too big to be announced at Anime Expo.
It would be like a Summer Games Fest.
Well, Tales of Arise was announced at like a Microsoft E3 presser, you know? But like, I was wondering if like maybe they announced a Digimon game. We know they're making one. Like, when's that going to show up? Or what's the team behind Code Vein doing now? I don't know. That's anime. But nope,
we expect a Tales of collection, like the PS2 collection, to like come out one day, and they're like, "Oh, we just localized the old games."
That would be amazing if they're just like, "Oh yeah, here's a Rebirth and Innocent or
Destiny 2,
and the remake of Destiny."
That would be like
the ultimate collection. Okay,
that'd be a miracle announcement that I feel like I have no faith in Bandai Namco ever doing or making.
Remember when we were wondering, like after Tales of Arise, we're like, now is a good time for Bandai Namco to release another remaster. Maybe we'll do a Zillia collection or something. And it was just Symphonia again.
they somehow like fucking made more bugs with the Symphonia release, and it's like, what the how?
Somehow the GameCube version is still the best, which is
the only one that's 60 frames per second.
So you know, it's just let sleeping dogs lie, I guess. So, or any of my Bleach fans out there, good luck. Good luck, and I'm sorry.
Damn, no faith.
No, I don't. Until they actually like prove it to me. Anyway, they held a. Atlus held a Metaphor ReFantazio panel at Anime Expo 2024. They had director Katsura Hashino and character designer Shigenori Soejima there to present the game. They've been really going ham on the marketing of this game. It's like a world tour. They've been at every significant event for this game.
Just kind of an aside, we've talked about this before, how like we discuss how like Square Enix's marketing is usually kind of weird and subpar. Sega is on the ball with their marketing.
Oh yeah,
they will not let you forget that their games are coming out. They just release trailer after trailer after trailer and interviews with voice actors and basically every single stream you can think of, they have something there. Yeah. So
they have just have a presence like that, like a huge, huge budget of like.
I mean, we
like
saw it with
travel all around the world. To fucking
we saw it with Persona. We even saw it quite a bit with Shin Megami Tensei. That we got a pretty decent marketing budget, and now like they're all in on Persona. They get plenty. Like they know what they have a strategy. I think is effective.
Yeah,
which is basically just don't let you forget that it's coming out.
Yeah, so you know the staff was there to introduce the game and then showed off like you know some artwork of the characters, the art job archetype creatures and the gauntlet runners, and they showed off a new story trailer. Just you know, just like kind of like the beginning premise of the game, nothing like too spoilerish. Pretty much of like you know how this journey to become a king begins. You know, with the assassination of the king and like this cursed prince that was the childhood friend of your protagonist. In that game, and then later on that night, they held a new like Atlas exclusive stream that just you know provides more in depth details of like the story premise. It's like it's nothing too essential, it's nothing too new or crazy. It's just, like for people who are interested in learning more about it, pretty much. And they were even careful to say, hey, they're only gonna show off like the beginning, you know, section of the game. If you don't want to know, if you want to go into this game blind, you can turn off the stream now and just wait till. And then purchase the game October 11th, you know, to learn more about it, and so forth. So they're even being like being mindful of people. It's like you know, letting them know we're not going to spoil, like you know, go all in on spoilers. But you know, sometimes Atlas does like to kind of spoil too much about their game. You know, like that recent Shin Megami Tensei 5 Vengeance trailer that came out new release. So hopefully they don't do it with this release.
I know we've talked about it before, but when they literally have Lavenza telling you, don't spoil the game.
Yeah. Atlas is fucking weird policies, man. So, but like the Atlas exclusive streams are cool because it's like they both have a set schedule, the English and Japanese side, and they both go off at the same time. And, you know, it is one-to-one exact same footage. The only difference with the English side is it's like it has English subtitles. And that's so like they're just making sure that like it's like par to par, you know.
Was it on the English YouTube channel or no?
It was on the English YouTube channel, yeah.
Like the Western one.
Western one, yeah.
Oh, that's actually interesting because what I've heard is that like sometimes Atlas, like when they do a stream or like a scheduled video, it'll have English subtitles, but it won't be on the Western YouTube channel. It'll be on the Japanese YouTube channel or sometimes the Asian one. And I was under the impression that it was like a ratings thing, an ESRB thing, and that like you can't, or there's some rules or restrictions in terms of what you can show if it's not rated, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. So that's like, for example, I think Soul Hackers 2 had a few, and maybe Shin Megami Tensei had a few where they were live streams that were subtitled, but they were on the Japanese channel.
That reminds me of like when we get like the first English footage from like Southeast Asia first or something.
Yeah, I was under the impression the reason why they don't sometimes show up on the Western channels is because it has to be like it has to go through a ratings, you know, in some way. Oh. I don't obviously know all the details, but I was talking to Zach, and that's what he was mentioning. Anyways, I think that's interesting that they had this Metaphor stream actually on the Western channels. That's cool.
Yeah. So it's getting closer and closer. We're all really interested to see how that
October is suddenly a very packed month for Japanese RPGs.
I haven't checked the release schedule on how many releases are going to be there. How many are we looking at?
Well, there's one that we're going to be talking about in just a moment here.
Oh yeah, true. Oh yeah, okay, we'll get to that. We'll get to these first before we as it does. But we were speaking of DBZ Kakarot earlier and how much he wanted a DBZ Kakarot but for Bleach. Bandai Namco has released a sales update for DBZ Kakarot, sharing that has surpassed 8 million units sold worldwide. That is a huge number for DBZ Kakarot and really shows just like how well loved DBZ is around the world.
I think FighterZ is at like 10 million
Oh, yeah, I imagine. Yeah.
And then I think Xenoverse is also somewhere between 8 and 10 million.
Xenoverse 2, man, is like the never-ending story for support in that game.
Yeah.
That's had so much post-launch support, it's nuts. In my mind, that's like the train simulator, but for these types of games. Where it's just like, it never stops getting new characters and content. And I'm scared to see like how much they've released for that game since when did Xenoverse 2 come out?
You know, like 2014.
Jesus Christ! Yeah, and just recently they
let me check that. I was
yeah,
I'm not sure.
Yeah,
it was a long time ago.
Yeah,
2016. It's not 2014.
Still a long time ago. Still a long time ago. It makes me wonder, like, if they can even fathom a Xenoverse 3, you know? Like, what the fuck would that even look like? Good. I don't even know. But yeah, DBZ Kakarot, that is the sort, like, the CyberConnect 2 developed RPG-esque game. I don't know how many RPG elements are really in Kakarot, too much. But that was released in 2020, worldwide. And yeah, it's done, sold an amazing amount of copies just over time. It also had, like, a handful of DLC that came out for it. The sixth and final DLC, Goku's Next Journey, was released earlier this year, and that was
as far as we know, it's the final DLC. But it would not surprise me if they're like, surprise, we're gonna make three more because we can.
Yeah. I mean, they know it'll sell, and you know, people will.
I mean, if Xenoverse can still get content,
yeah, and they, you know, that their eyes are dollar signs with us sparking zero. Because there's no way that's the final roster for that game forever. I can only imagine how much DLC that game is going to have. But you know what? It's Budokai Tenkaichi, you know? People fucking love that game, so... hopefully it's awesome. It looks great. And I like how they're deliberately trying to sell it that, like... No, we're not modernizing this game, so, like, everything is balanced and, like, esports ready. Or it's not competitively focused, you know? The point of Budokai Tenkaichi is to accurately portray power levels, so characters like Mr. Satan are just like totally fucking useless against like most of the cast because they're like all powered up supreme beings pretty much. So people who pick Mr. Satan know what they're getting into, like a really weak character. It's deliberately designed like that, it always has been. So yep. It's nice that they're leaning into that, but that's cool. And like we mentioned earlier, there's two more RPGs that have been dated for October. For the first one, East 10 Nordics, that is coming on October 25th for PS5, PS4, Switch, and PC. Like we mentioned earlier, that like with this PC release, it's coming out not as an English patch. It is just going to be as sold and released normally. They also announced a limited edition sold on the Nice America Online store for $105, that has a soundtrack, mini art book, sling bag, and postcards. And a deluxe edition will be at various retailers for with a soundtrack and mini art book. We're all really looking forward to it here. I'm really curious to, like, I didn't mess with any of the Nice Japanese demos. I didn't get the Japanese release. I just wanted to go into this fresh. And, you know, I think you and me, Adam, have been, and even Chow, have been getting tired
Chow, of the party you play system. This? I forget if you played
this. Yeah, I played this one.
Oh, yeah, I forgot you did.
I think this is a very good use game, in my opinion.
Chow has been talking for years about how he doesn't like the party system. So
yeah, I don't. I think it was only bearable in use 8, and even then it was like, I am already sick and tired with it.
Yeah,
and then it's like, yeah, it's a breath of fresh air, in my opinion. I think the worst part of this game is just like the budget. It's like a lot of sceneries are too recycled, and then the ship battles felt really choppy and kind of pointless to me, kind of thing. That's kind of for me. But everything else about it, it's like, yeah, I like the story direction. I like the whole atmosphere with the Vikings and stuff. You know, like Karja is a great heroine. So I think it's like really good in my opinion. So
yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to this.
definitely one of
it also has like my favorite, like I think it's probably my second favorite final boss fight of all Yeast Game, I think, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think really? I talked about this before. What's your other final boss favorite?
My favorite final boss is the use of Ophid Forgotten Upon.
Yeah.
It's so cool. It's so cool because you're like reflecting bullets and you're like jumping on ice blocks to shoot his head. It's like, yeah, it's so epic, right? Yeah, this one is like, this one is also epic as hell, in my opinion.
I've heard that this is the one that puts that finally gives East Othin Thalgana a run for its money as a final boss.
Oh man, I'm excited. But so, yeah, that's a
I think if you deliver a good use final boss, it's like the rest of the game could be shit. It'd still be okay. Oh, I think that's kind of like how it is.
Anyways, when I was getting to earlier about October filling up, this is October 25. A day before is Romancing Saga 2 Remake, October 24.
Ooh.
And then just like a few weeks before that, on October 11th, is Metaphor. So that's three fairly big JRPGs just coming out in that month. And I'm sure other smaller games will fill in that rest of that schedule too. And that's not even including like stuff coming out in like late September, like, I don't know, the Zelda game or whatever. So, Reynatus.
So we have another localization kind of almost out of nowhere here from Red Art Games, who previously announced that they were bringing Rear Sakai over as El Rentaro's Wanderings. They are bringing Goblin Slayer, Another Adventurer, Nightmare Feast to the West for Switch. This is a weird one because this game was originally came out in Japanese in February, but through Bushiroad. And before it came out, Bushiroad kept on marketing that this would be getting an English release. It even had the official website have an English toggle option for like official character descriptions and everything on the site. And then like a few weeks before it came out, or maybe a few days before it came out, they just suddenly said, oh, this is not getting an English release, only Japanese. And it's like, what? Huh? And and there's been no update since of like whether they decide whether they plan on having the Steam release be in English. So we will get an English release of this game for Switch, but we don't know if it'll have an English release on Steam as well because of that.
That feels like a pretty awkward way of announcing things.
So Red Art Games, I believe they're French. I might be wrong. They're French. They're a French publisher. They're kind of like a boutique publisher, so they're not very big. And so I guess they just are starting to handle some of the like the console physical publishing of some of these Bushiroad games. And Bushiroad is like a Japanese company that mostly had done mobile games for the last several years and now are just now starting to kind of dabble into console games. And they recently announced the Rear Sakai, as you mentioned. And then like Bushiroad at the same time basically announced that was going to get an English update on Steam, but we haven't heard anything specific for this Goblin Slayer game. Red Art Games is like a probably I think they're a very very small company, so they probably how do I put this? They probably don't have a lot of resources to do like the porting or whatnot. They probably have to get someone else to do that.
Yeah.
So
it's kind of leaves us in like an awkward position for this game. Has mixed review score, user review score on Steam. I don't know. It's kind of, I mean, it's cool that it's getting an official English release, but like I think Bushiroad needs to like, it really needs to sort out its marketing strategy.
So Bushiroad is also releasing that Hunter game.
Yeah,
and that one is actually being published by Arc System Works. So they're handling that. And they just recently announced, or they just recently opened a European division, I think, Arc System Works did.
That's right, in France, I believe.
Yeah.
So, yeah, good for them, because it's always been kind of a hassle on the European front when it comes to Arc System Works release. So, by just getting that all, you know, consolidated officially under one roof.
Remember really in the pre-Sega days for Atlus? Like, Atlus in Europe was just a really weird combination.
Oh yeah, who did they have to go?
They had to go through NIS America sometimes, or sometimes through Deep Silver slash Koch Media, which is now Embracer. They had to, basically Atlas always had to partner with someone in Europe to publish games over there before the Sega acquisition, because it was just, they just didn't have a presence. You know, once Sega bought them, Sega's huge in Europe, so there's no problem, no longer a problem really. But anyways,
yeah,
things were sometimes tricky back in the day.
I would have thought. But yeah, I mean, it's good that, you know, Arxis finally joined that of like, hey, well, we'll have an established presence here in Europe. Good on them. They also have like an anime coming out next year for Guilty Gear Strive. Like that's like a sequel to Guilty Gear Strive. So interesting enough. So yeah, that pretty much wraps up, you know, the week for RPG news and you know, all the announcements that came out at Anime Expo. I'm trying to think if there's anything else out of Anime Expo that we're expecting. As of the time of this recording, the Spike Chunsoft panel has yet to happen. I know James will be at that, so if there's anything new there, he'll be there to report it. And I think that's really the last panel that might have anything RPG adjacent relevant to us. The Fate Grand Order panel just wrapped up, and it just had more, you know, announcements for the Fate Go game itself. And yeah, I think that's it. That's a wrap for AES, aside for anything that Spike Chunsoft may throw at us. So, yeah.
All right. So we oftentimes end our podcast by talking about what RPGs are coming up in the next week. You know, what RPGs are coming up next week before next week's podcast.
I have no clue.
Absolutely nothing. I have nothing on my schedule.
Okay. I was like, yeah. I don't even know, man.
But there's a couple retro.
There's a couple of things that come out the week after in my schedule, but I have nothing for next week. Like, literally nothing.
Are there any non-RPGs coming out this week?
I don't have that in front of me.
Let's see. I'm going to go to Wikipedia. What's the July?
Shout out to whoever updates the game release schedules in Wikipedia.
Yeah.
It's actually become a really good resource.
Yeah.
I was actually looking up something for, like, 2008 on Wikipedia, and, like, the schedules are not nearly as thorough back then as they were now. So
there's Ace Combat 7 is coming out to Nintendo Switch. The Bleach Brave Souls, that ancient mobile game, is coming out to Switch.
Okay.
The Muvlove is coming out. Hey, yeah, the Muvlove visual novel is coming out to Switch, but you can get them for an absurdly low price at Humble for PC at like $26. I think the only like new release, which is still not kind of new, is the new Princess Maker 2 Regeneration. It is like a HD remaster remake of Princess Maker 2 for Windows or PC and Switch.
I got the dumbest idea. Let's just buy Adam a random game and tell him just to play it so he has podcast material for next week.
Yeah, I'm playing a game right now. I just can't talk about it.
But let's buy Hookah Haze. Yeah, that's it. Go smoke hookah with anime girls, Adam. We condemn you.
No thanks.
Oh wait, apparently Peak Fiction came out, according to my friends, whatever this Peak Fiction is.
What is Peak Fiction now? Everyone says Peak Fiction, and I'm not convinced. What's
they
Peak
call
Fiction?
They call it Rance 9.
They still make
those. Yeah, I don't know.
Don't search that up, please.
So yeah, I don't know what we're going to talk about next week, but we'll talk about how Brian's and James's trips were, and that's our new games of the week.
Real quick, so Brian is at Denver Fan Expo, which is more of like a Comic-Con movie TV show expo, but according to him, there's like tons and tons and tons of Genshin merch and fan art, as well as Baldur's Gate 3, those two things.
And Elden Ring,
a bunch of Ranny. Yeah. He bought a Ranny print.
I heard like in the Anime Expo, the Holyoverse tab outlet is impossible to get into. It's like the
I hear it's a complete keyboard shit show.
Yeah, did you get your network shirt?
Yeah, I somehow got James to pick me up a Tsukihime shirt.
I got a friend pick me up, but the size I wore is completely sold out. So she's like, are you okay with extra large?
I'm
like,
it's going to shrink in the laundry. You're fine.
Just gain weight.
Yeah. Of course, Anime Expo is always chaotic. And it's just like, as more and more of these companies, you know, become more popular, it's only going
to
get more.
So got her to get me a bunch of Falcom merch. She was like, I had to spend $200 to get the free Mishy plushie, but I can't spend $200. How do you want anything?
Wait, I had to spend $200 to get the free Mishy plushie?
She's like, I want the Mishy plushie. I don't want anything else, but I can't spend $200. He's like, Chow, can you buy something?
Well, did you buy something?
I did. I told her to buy me the Daybreak. I think
this defies the definition of free.
I know.
I told her to buy the Daybreak puzzle piece for me and the Daybreak plushies for me.
How much are they? Are those $200?
No. The plushies are like $40.
Okay.
So she still had to spend like $80 somewhere else from the Falcon panel to get the free Mishy.
Jesus Christ, man.
This is how they get you. Really want to...
Yeah, if you really want to just drain your money, go to Anime Expo. Drain your time and drain your money and drain your cold. But yeah, that's it. So that's the week. You can find us over in the internet, as they say, on rpgsite.net. You can find us on x/Twitter over at rpgsite. You can find us on Facebook through facebook.com/rpgsitenet. Our podcast episodes are uploaded through YouTube, through youtube.com/rpgsitenet. Go listen to us at your favorite podcast app. You can also find us on Discord through discord.gg/rpgsite, where a lot of people are talking about the Elden Ring DLC. People on the mobile game channel are currently pulling on Fate Grand Order. It's a great time there, as I'm describing to you. And that's it. We'll come back to you next week. I don't know what we're going to talk about, but that's the fun of it. We just make up shit on the fly. We'll just make up games, you know, that we played, theoretically. Until then, stay safe, take care, and if you're living in a hot place, stay cool, because it is fucking hot in a lot of places around here. Until then.
For sure. Bye.